Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
The expression from the music inspired me so much to take risks, and it inspired damn near the whole rap game.
Hello again, I'm Adam Unz. You may know me as the host of The Opus, and now I'm bringing my own show, The Spark Parade, to the Consequence Podcast Network. I speak with artists and creatives about the cultural artifacts that spark their personal interest and creativity, whether it's music, books, movies, video games, or any other kind of art.
I've never spoke about it in this amount of detail. I'm suddenly going, oh my God, I'm blowing my own mind here, Bryce. It's actually a giant part of my life.
By talking about the things we love, we share and discover insights into our personality and the things that drive us.
It's just magic, really. I mean, frustrating. And it made some people angry, but I don't think anyone's ever done anything like it.
I speak with people like Connor Oberst, Phoenix's Thomas Mars, Chris Gethard, Helen Hong, Adrian Young, and more, so their sparks of inspiration can start a fire in you.
I'm grateful for those who continue to put our history and who we are as a people in the forefront and make you see it.
Find the Spark Parade wherever you get your podcasts.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Oh, hello, podcast listener. Don't want to interrupt your fine day. I know we have a big show, but we thought we'd jump in real quick and tell you about how you can win Bonnaroo tickets with a camping pass, Barry Quarter.
This is huge. This is, man, I wish I could, I wish I could sign up.
By the way, when you say that, I want to see your hands, by the way. I need the hands above the table when you say this is huge.
Huge. Okay. Beyond the screen.
All right, so this is exciting. So you get in the years past, we've basically just done, hey, saying something nice about us. Now we've taken the we've gone next level with our vanity, and we want you to make art with our faces.
That's right. I need you to draw something about me.
Okay.
And if Brad and Russ are in there as well, that's great. But mostly about me.
Wait a minute. Oh, it's about Barry.
Oh, we didn't agree to that.
I mean, I think anything what podcast related, if you could whip up something and whether it be by hand, whether it be on Photoshop, whether, you know, it's something you force your child to do, whatever you need, whatever you can do to get these tickets in your hand. That's what we need from you.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It'll be fun. Make it that's fun.
And how do we submit that, Russ?
Send them to comments at thewhatpodcast.com or you can tweet them to us, thewhat_podcast.
I didn't even know that was a thing. Comments at thewhatpodcast.com?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is that where we've never read any comment we've gotten.
I have. Keep sending them. Is that where we got the first drawing already?
First one came to us on Twitter.
I have to say it's pretty strong. I love my hair. It looks very jaunty in the picture.
Mm-hmm. So, it's a great first example of what we're looking for.
Maybe we can put it on here for people to see so they know what they have to beat.
That's well, you leave it to Russ. He's got it going on. He's got the thing popped up. It's all good. That's our first submission. Do we know the names of this person? The name of this person, rather?
Nope.
Ponto, wasn't it?
Gary, got it. All right, there you go. Be like Gary. Submit your fine piece of what podcast art for Bonnaroo tickets. We'll do the drawing. We'll give it 4 weeks. You think we can make this happen in 4 weeks, or we want longer?
I wouldn't put a limit on it. Given knowing how we operate, I wouldn't put a deadline on it.
It's a good point. We'll
pick them when we're ready. Okay.
Yeah, how about that? Right, Val, so pressuring me. On to the What Podcast, a big show today. Let's do it.
Consequence Podcast Network. A genre pool we so rarely dip our toe into. This week on the What Podcast, we talk to one of the biggest electronic artists in the world, Tyrone, from Rufus to Soul. New album, new song, new tour dates, where they started, how they got here, the highs and lows along the way. We dive into it all today on the What Podcast. It's Electronic Music Day, kids. with Tyrone from Rufus the Soul, Brad Steiner, Barry Corder, Lord Taco, the What Podcast starts right now.
The What Podcast, which bands this year? That matter, Barry Corder, Lord Taco, Brad Steiner. Afternoon, guys. How are you? How are things? You look pretty, Barry. You look well. Everybody okay?
Super. Doing great.
Yeah? You doing great?
Yeah, doing great.
Okay.
Yep. Everything's good. How are you?
You know, I don't think I've ever heard you say, I'm just okay.
Yeah, I'm not. I'm always good. Life is good.
All right. Taco, how's the bus?
Bus is good. Just like
I'm
what you got in that cabinet? What's in that cabinet?
Let's see. Oh, you can reach into the cabinet. You got a PBR cabinet.
Yeah.
You got your own PBR cabinet. Wow. How about that?
Just take it back there. Yep.
Yeah. Because you don't want the boss to see it. You don't want to see.
No, that's why PBR. That's why I'm in the bus hiding out.
So this is an exciting week for us, Barry. I think that we have the biggest artist we've ever had on the show.
That's right.
You think I'm overstating it? You think I'm bloviating
it?
No.
You know, if we're going by the poster.
Yeah, if we're going by our own, like, poster, if we're making our What Show podcast festival poster, they would probably be our headliner, huh?
This would be the headliner.
Okay. Yeah,
their second line on some other posters, but on ours, man, it's top. Pretty cool.
Yeah, so it's not really about any festival in particular, although that they are playing Boston Calling and Forecastle. You know, I'll talk about it afterwards, about their interaction with festivals in general, because something about this conversation sort of struck me, and I don't think we've ever really dove too far into it, because we live in this world, you and I and Taco, where festivals really matter. And to some artists, they just don't.
Yeah. I was thinking about that, because we do put a lot of emphasis and it's one of the questions that we've asked for 5 years, which ones do you like the most?
Mm-hmm.
And for the most part, they see a bus. They see a backstage and they see a stage and then a crowd.
And then they see a check
and they see a bus and then they go, then they see the road. And you know, we've asked the question before, which one do you approach this festival differently than the other? And of course the answer is no, because who's going to say, yeah, we do this one better. You know, we put more energy into this one than that one. Nobody's going to say that.
Well, we always, because we personalize it because we think it's a girlfriend. You know, girl do you like better? Pick one. You have to.
That's right. But the other thing is, and we have heard people say Bonner is different because sometimes they stay longer. You know, they actually go to see other acts. They might stay a day or two. Number one. But the other thing I was thinking about is the stage and the show and the 90 minutes are pretty much, they're similar. I don't want to say they're all the same, but they're similar. It's what happens away from that 90 minutes that makes one festival different than the other.
Right.
And they don't always see that. Yeah. You know, so
I see what you mean.
Yeah.
Oh, well, to cut to the chase, our guest today, Rufus the Soul. Tyrone from Rufus the Soul. And believe me, it was all I could do to not sing Call Tyrone while he was talking to us. I wanted to so bad. How many times do you actually meet somebody named Tyrone?
Not very often.
I can't think I've ever met a Tyrone, now that I think about it. I don't think I can find a Tyrone that I know in my life except for him. And I so badly wanted to sing, but I just couldn't do it. Couldn't bring myself to do it.
He was great. It was really cool talking to him.
So it's pretty much a standalone episode today where, you know, we're not going to get into much festival talk. We spent a good 25, 30 minutes with Tyrone from Rufus the Soul. Talks about the new album, talks about, you know, what they've been doing the last 2 years. I love the conversation about his kid and how priorities have changed. And, you know, I feel like at least I take from it, and I mention it, I hear a lot of mental health things happening in and around this conversation, not to mention it did feel as though it was on the brink of ending. Did you pick that up?
Yeah, to be clear, to your point, it sounded like they fixed it.
They fixed it.
Sound like they're in it now, but they were headed towards, as he said, a shitstorm.
Yeah. And, you'll hear it from him. So here we go. Rufus the Soul on the What Podcast. Enjoy. Oh, hello there, friend. This is Brad Steiner.
I'm Barry Corder.
After you check out the latest episode of the What Podcast, be sure to check out some of the other great programs on the Consequence Podcast Network, including
Rootsland. It's an original story of two friends who take a musical and spiritual journey from the suburbs of Long Island to the streets of Kingston, Jamaica.
Or Kyle Meredith With, where you can find interviews with all of your favorite musicians and bands. Hosted by our guy, Kyle Meredith. New episodes air weekly on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Head to consequence.net to listen to these podcasts and many great others.
How you doing? Sorry for the delay.
No, it's okay. Look,
glad you're here.
You've got sunny LA life to live. You're doing just fine. How are things?
Great. Things are great. Yeah.
I gotta imagine so. I mean, it's not like your I don't know. Your band seems to be doing just okay.
You know, we've had a good run. I'm stoked about it. We've been together for like 11 years, and it's been a really smooth, it's been a great journey, and we're here, and I'm stoked.
Well, we'll talk about the new album, the new song, of course, here in a little bit, but I kind of wanted to start at Bonnaroo 2018, because I don't think that there was a more talked about tent show afterwards than what you guys pulled off in 2018. Do you have any memories of that? They all run together, don't they, at some point?
They really do blend in at a certain point. And especially, like, having not done many shows over the last 3 years, like, since, I think, like, 2018, 2019, basically, shows just came to a halt for us, and we went into the studio and started writing music and made the most of not touring. And I don't know. It's weird. I don't really remember being on tour. Like, I don't remember much before it. Like, I do. And I remember being on a hamster wheel doing a lot of shows and
It's sort of like the case of the COVID brain, right? There's life pre-COVID and life post-COVID. And anything that happened before it, were we even alive? Did we do anything?
Exactly. Yeah, it's changed so much for us, like, in a real positive way. I mean, we're hard workers. We work a lot, probably workaholics. Like, we spend a lot of time making music, and it just forced us to slow down a bit. And I don't know, it was a really nice reminder of the fact that we're friends. Like, we're three guys that are in the band, and we're best friends. We love making music, and it was a good pause for us to kind of reset and rethink where we wanted to go. And I don't know, we changed the way we write too. Usually it's like, in the past, it's been late nights throughout, you know, till the morning, just following the creative train, hoping that a song kind of is born out of it. And this time around, we just, we had more structure. We did more of like a 9-to-5, only it was 11-to-7 for us. To skip the traffic.
And still not waking up early, are you? Still not waking up early.
I am. I'm a dad, and I've got a little 2.5-year-old son. Oh, so wow. I'm up at 5 at the crack of dawn.
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. Yeah, that's nice.
This is what I kind of wanted to get at, because you said 11 years, and you guys started in Australia, and now you're in Los Angeles, right? And you're got a child. What's that transition been like? I mean, I know I was reading a little bit, especially about the property where you recorded your first album, right? Sold for a nice little bit of change back in Australia, right? Because apparently they sold it as the place where Rufus recorded, right? That's kind of funny. But what's it like going from that to where you are now? As far as like a band, what's that transition been like over the years?
I mean, it's surreal. I mean, I think when we started out, we had dreams and aspirations that were far smaller than they are now. Like, you know, in Australia, we grew up in Sydney. So it was like to play the local kind of live venues there. And then as you kind of grow, our goals and the goalposts shifted, and it's been like a steady climb. And I don't know, I guess the biggest transition has been the last 2-3 years where I'm a dad now, I'm married, and we as a band, like if we were to sustain the way we were going, like we had to change some things. This was just like so many shows and we were running ourselves into the ground, and it was compromising the quality of the shows. And I don't know, it was also just like pushing each of us as friends further apart. And so it's just been like a nice reset that wasn't easy. It wasn't like, and the last 3 years haven't been easy. It's been difficult. And I feel like we're reaping the rewards just in terms of our friendship and the music making, and me just being a dad too. Like I didn't know, I wouldn't have known what I was missing out on. I would have been on the road being like, yeah, I'm a great dad. And, you know, I wouldn't have known any different. And realistically, I wouldn't have been in my son's life nearly as much. And it's been a big gift that I get to wake up next to him and, you know, like hang out and then go make music with my friends.
Well, you said that it switched and changed a little bit of your priorities. You know, those shows did get really massive and you guys did that on purpose. And it gained you so much traction in the community. You got such a massive amount of fans throughout the last couple of years. And now it's a switch of the, I guess, a little refocus of the priorities. What does the next 2 years look like for you guys?
I mean, it looks quite similar, really. Like we're back in the studio now. We got back in there to make more music a few weeks ago. And that's our plan, like to continue making music. It's what we love to do.
Yeah, but you guys, you said
we'll be touring a bunch this year, but
you said there was different. You said there was a part of it where it was almost like tearing you guys apart. You don't want to get back there. So what do you do to sort of protect yourself from that kind of experience again?
Sure. I guess it's the amount of touring. We'd go on the road for 3 months at a time and then come home. Now it would look like touring for 4 weeks and then coming back for a week and then touring for 4 weeks and coming back for a week. And maybe it's portioned out a little more, like spaced out. So you might do like 5 tours in a year, like across the country, like across the globe. And there's just more space between where we can kind of reset our clock, reconnect, get in the studio. Because it's also like, you know, when we're on the road at 3 months at a time, there's no new music being written. Like, so that the muscle, I see it as a muscle being in the studio where you're, you know, you're being creative. The longer that you're in the studio, the better you get, the sharper your tools get. And maybe you, you know, fall on the easy, quick fixes or quick ideas. But for the most part, you're really like trained, like a, I don't know, like someone in sports that's really sharp at their skill in the studio. And it just feels nicer and healthier for us to be able to not leave either the live arena for too long or the writing arena for too long. Just because, yeah, even not like having a year and a half off touring, coming back and playing our first show at Red Rocks, last year, it was like quite daunting, really. It was exciting, but we're like, are we gonna know what we do? Like, do we know how to do this thing? And it like riding a bike. You don't forget. But
you said it started about 3 years ago where you sort of realized you needed to do something. Was there an event or was it, was there one night where you kind of blew up at each other or could you see it coming and then COVID hit and it gave you the chance to fall back and rethink?
It was kind of a shitstorm that was growing. It was kind of all directions and all things were coming to a head where, you know, things were really exciting for us. A lot of exciting things were happening, like, you know, playing a bunch of festivals in front of a lot of crowds, like big crowds. And, you know, I think just you inherently as an artist put pressure on yourself to create new things and make new music. And we weren't really getting that time. And when you're touring so much, you're like, your personal life's kind of pushed to the side a bit. So in terms of becoming a new parent, for me, that was really difficult. And I know for the guys too, it was really hard. So it was an accumulation of a lot of things. And then just having been in a band for 10 years, or I guess 8 years, 9 years at the time, I think you just undergo change in that time period. Like we were early 20s when we got together, and now we've entered our 30s, and I don't know. I think you just change and evolve, and priorities change and shift, and it just gave us the time to kind of talk to each other and reset the clock and come at writing from a different perspective. And I don't know. I just feel like great things come out of doing that, as opposed to if we just steamrolled ahead. And I don't think we'd be here right now.
Well, I mean, it sort of feels like, you know, the way that you're describing it is that you found not just the way that this operation works best for you, but also maybe even funneled its way into your songwriting. You know, the way that, you know, I kind of describe it as emo EDM. You know, you guys are so vulnerable. You actually put so much, you know, actual, you know, work into the songwriting part of it, which is the part that I find to be a little bit more refreshing. And it does feel as though that this album is a little bit more focused on that, right? Am I reading that wrong?
Yeah, sure. No, that's fair. I mean, all of them, we throw ourselves as much into all of them, and they're kind of like a timestamp. Not like a diary entry. It's like an unintentional timestamp of where we're at that moment in time when we make a record. And bands might, you know, write the songs, go in there and record in a studio over the course of like a month or two. We're in the studio writing on our synths and our drums and like at an unlimited amount of tools kind of at our disposal to write and create. But we're in there over the course of like a year and a half. And that's like full time just going into the studio. So it's a lot of time that we're spending on fishing. It's like you go in there and you can write a bunch of ideas and they could all be crap. But occasionally you just like stumble on a really real raw song that reflects where we're at. And it is vulnerable. And it usually is. I feel like when we're at our best is when we're like, you know, we tap into something that's vulnerable, but also hopeful. And it feels good. A lot of my favorite bands like Radiohead, they do that. It's like this hopeful disease, discomfort, euphoria. Right. But it's like just treads a line that I just think is really exciting.
Yeah.
Given all that, how much did it change over, if you had that much time, did the final sound like what it did when you started, or did what you were doing when it started completely go away, or did you keep some of that? You know what I mean?
We had a lot of creative freedom going in because we didn't have a deadline. Like touring was wiped off. So it wasn't like we had, we've got 2 weeks to write a song.
Right.
It was kind of like, all right. We went to Joshua Tree. We were in this ranch type thing, which is a studio. It's called Escape Studios, and it was awesome. Like, it's in the middle of nowhere, and it was just us. And we, you know, would start the day with meditation, to exercise, get in a cold plunge, and then by midday we'd get in there and write music. And it was just a really cool way to do it. And we were trying different beats for ourselves, and different tempos and different instruments. I think it was more like classical songwriting, where we're just trying to write songs without producing them or seeing them all the way to the finish line. And then you kind of like end up with little gems, and then you, over the course of the next 6 months, year, you're trying to crack the code on them and finish them. And we always go into an album without a clear intention of what it's going to end up like. It's more like, what's inspiring us at the time? What are you guys listening to? We share a bunch of music. We listen through the, you know, albums that have inspired us across our years. Like, we'd listen to an album while we did exercise every day over the course of that 2 months. And, you know, that bleeds into the record. Being in Joshua Tree, where it's like, it essentially feels like you're on the moon. It's just like rock outcrops. That all influences things.
Yeah, you sound so mentally centered. Is this a reflection of the work that you've done, or were you guys all this always sort of this, you know, Buddhist? Mentally Buddhist.
Yeah, no, we weren't. We weren't always like that. You know, like we were young and silly, and we've always cared about our live shows. We've always cared about making the music, but you know, we had a lot of fun across the years. Like, you know, before we walked out on stage, 5-6 years ago, we were having a whiskey shot, you know, before walking out.
And I did one just now.
How good. And now we do ginger shots before we walk out. It's just like, you know, it's where we're at now. And
I hear you.
Yeah,
I mean, it is definitely more built for the long haul. So this sound, you know, you're not talking to somebody who knows what he's talking about when it comes to this. No, so bear with me for a second. But when you were a kid and you were playing around and saying to yourself, I want to make a band, I want to do this. How did you stumble upon making electronic music? How did you find that world instead of how a kid would normally just pick up a guitar and start writing songs like that?
Well, honestly, that's where I started, was with the guitar. I started on piano when I was like 5, and then kind of moved into playing in bands when I was 12. And I always just wrote music kind of from 14. I used any software I could get my hands on and just recorded more alternative kind of I guess like acoustic just songs, really. Yeah. It was just fun for me. And the three of us produce and write the songs, and we all have a different story as to how we ended up, like, you know, making the songs we make.
Sure.
But for me, that was it. And I met one of the other guys, and he was making more club music, I guess, and we kind of met in the middle, and we were like, oh, you guys, you like Book of Shade? And there was a few acts that we bonded over, and Chemical Brothers, oh cool, yeah, I like that. And then we just started making some songs, and you know, we would share our production tools with each other, and there was a healthy push and pull, and there has been between all three of us in terms of where we want to take a song. And that, you know, for me, I'm probably more influenced originally by rock you know, and John probably more so like club songs. He has an appreciation for pop and everything. And James, he loves all music. He's
polka. It's polka, yeah. Isn't it? I know it.
He's the glue.
He's very the yellow seven. Man. I feel like they're like in everything. You need like a yellow seven that brings all the compounds together. There is a big difference, I guess, in your, maybe there's not, when it comes to like the live show versus the recorded product. I've always wondered this, and again, you're talking to an idiot, so I apologize up front. But when you're on stage, and I know that you're doing, you know, mostly, you know, vocals and keyboards and stuff, but when I'm watching an electronic artist on stage, how much freedom is actually happening in that space? Is it, some of it's premixed, I understand, but what in it is controllable and maneuvered and worked out on stage in the moment between the two or three of you rather?
Well, it depends on the act, but for us in particular, like, we like to build out our sets and lock it in pretty solidly in terms of, you know, we see the lights in our show as an important tool and asset. It's kind of like the fourth member of the band. But we don't want it to just be a lighting show when we play. So we like the interaction of it being a band that can jam out and kind of stay on a loop for however long we want. And we can improvise. And there are moments where there are drum solos and it's evolved as well. When we started, we had less freedom to be able to jam on stage. And now we've built that in.
Because for your own comfort?
No, not so much. Well, I mean, set times, you only really get 25 minutes, 30 minutes at the start of your career. It's like, go play three songs and come off. Yeah. So you're basically just playing them verbatim. But now, I don't know, we've just got more tools in terms of equipment, more know-how in terms of how to go about things, how to go on a loop and stay there, and how that is all synced together in terms of our lights in front of house. Like, the team that is, you know, from the audience's perspective, how is it staying in time? Like, that's a bit of like a... It's a challenge to know how to do that. I'm definitely not very tech savvy to be able to go, oh, this is how you do it.
Sure.
Like, it's been a learning process and there are many ways to go about it.
But it seems to me like if it's not coming in with like a pre-mix and you guys are just sort of like putting your vocals and some effects around it, it does feel as though sort of like a high wire act that you're pulling off if you're doing loops on the fly and you guys are all just sort of, you know, seeing where the moment takes you. Is that right?
I mean, we're not like a jam band, so it's not like seeing that.
I know how it unfolds.
But yeah, it's more like, I guess we build it in. So it's not like, hey, are you guys feeling a jam right now? It's kind of like we've allocated ourselves times and moments in the set where it's like, here's the part where we're going to go on like a 1 minute, like, and it's not necessarily a minute, but however long, we've preset how long it's going to be. Where it's like we can jam out and we can loop something. And there's freedom for us to do what we want.
I was going to ask how much of that comes from trust from having done it with each other for so long.
Yeah, a lot of it. And it's like a lot of it is trust. And it's like a language, I guess.
Right.
After doing it for so long with each other, it's like we don't really need to say, okay, I'm going to take this little moment here or...
Yeah,
it's more fluid and, you know, we get time to rehearse. And so it's not as like, I would just say we're not a jam band. We're an electronic act. We make alternative electronic music, but we know how to play our instruments and we know how to jam.
So the reason I bring that up is because I adore the XX. I love them. And I think that, you know, they're one of my favorite, you know, bands on the planet. But that live show is almost like Jamie has hit play and it's over when the track is done, you know? And sometimes I'm just watching Jamie just stand back there. I'm like, all right, don't really have much to do back here.
Well, that's exactly what I mean by like, it depends on the act. Like, there are so many acts that have different setups in terms of there's so many ways to go about it. And a really important thing for us was having live drums. We knew that. That was, you asked it before. You're like, how did you get into electronic music?
Uh-huh.
That is how I saw acts from Australia, like Cut Copy. And
I love
presets.
Cut Copy. I love
Cut
Copy.
Great. Yeah. And it's just like, they were doing, it sounded like a band, but it was electronic music. And I was like, oh, maybe I like electronic music. This is just like rock, but in...
Yeah.
And it kind of opened the gateway of me being a little more open-minded to electronic music.
Believe me, nothing has screwed up old white guy more than seeing a hip-hop band with a band. watching a rapper perform with a band. You know, he's sitting there wanting to hate. They don't even play their own instruments. Oh, wait. Yeah, they're playing instruments. So, yeah.
I want to go back, if I can, real quick to the album, because I'm interested. I'm fascinated by this idea of you not having a deadline and you having all that time, because we've talked about this on here many, many times with ACT, this whole process of writing. You've got some bands that love that deadline. They love the pressure. You know, they can turn around and make it happen and do it in 2 or 3 weeks. Whereas if you have unlimited time, it seems to me like it'd be easy to just get lost. You know, yesterday was done and over. Now I want to do something new, or what I'm feeling this week is completely different than last week or 2-3 months ago. How do you keep that focus?
And, it's definitely it's a challenge. Like that is what we experience. Like we're kind of like, we feel a certain way about a song, and you know, we're excited by certain things today, and then in 6 months' time that changes, and the production can change on the song, and your perspective on the song that you wrote 6 months ago can change, and some stand the test of time and some don't. And we've got a vault of skeleton songs that haven't stood the test of time, and you know, that we haven't put out. So it's kind of been a gift in a way that it takes us so long to write music, because most of the songs that end up on an album, we've been sitting with them for like 6+ months.
That's a different perspective.
and love them. So it's like Yeah, it feels good to let go of it and let it into the world. And you know where you sit with it. And sure, maybe in 5 years' time, I might be like, oh, I don't like that song. But I mean, we've given it a chance and we've given it time. But there is a process of losing yourself in the mud. And there's, you can easily get lost. And what was helpful is taking a break. Like we'd take a 2 week
walk
break,
away, walk away, weeks. Put it, yeah, come back, yeah. Put it, walk away, put it, come back to
you
it.
You know,
yeah.
It's such a simple concept, Barry, but I haven't really thought about it that way. If I did this for a living and I was a songwriter, I'm so impetuous. I would walk into a studio just in a bad mood one day and be like, all right, I'm writing a song about being in a bad mood. And then 2 days later, I'm like, I don't even remember what I was talking about then.
Yeah,
like,
what was I so upset about? And I'm just sitting here thinking, if you've got a toddler, man, they change from week to week to week. So, you know,
you're talking about me again, aren't you, Barry?
Yeah,
you're talking about me.
Exactly right. So I know what you're going through. But yeah, a 2 week old is completely different human being than a 2 month old or a 1 year old. So your whole world's changing. So that's why it's so fascinating to me.
Sure. Thanks. It is really fascinating. We actually got Ziggy, my son, like there's a little recording that I got of him before he could say any words. And I just found his voice so cute. I'm sure every parent does when their kid's kind of babagooking. But like I recorded it on my phone, and we managed to squeeze him into one of the songs on our album called Make It Happen. He's just at the end of the song, and it just makes me happy. Like the little trinkets and what do you call it? Easter eggs that are in the album. But, you know, they kind of come out of making an album for a year and a half.
Yeah. That's really great. If we made an album, Barry, we would just have random sound effects of Taco opening a PBR. You know, just randomly for no reason. Yeah, there it is. I know. For no reason. Drinking beer. All right, so this is something we do on occasion. First off, thank you so much for spending so much time with us and you know, dealing with, you know, at least in one particular person, mine, not knowing what the hell I'm talking about. But what I want to play a little game that we usually do with some people, predictive texts. What podcast predictive texts? So basically, I put in to Google, does Rufus Du Sol, and I let the Google predictive text finish the sentence for me. All right. So I'm going to ask you a bunch of questions from the Google predictive text. Okay.
Go ahead.
Does Rufus Du Sol song?
Yes. Yes.
Yes.
We do.
Good. Okay.
They song hard.
Is Rufus Du Sol EDM?
Well, I don't like the word EDM. Electronic music, and it is dance music. So,
okay. What does Rufus the Soul mean in English?
That's what it means.
I was going to say that's what it means
in English. Yeah.
Look, these are absurd things here. I like this one. Is Rufus the Soul pregnant?
There was a time period where we were just Rufus, and a lot of people thought it was just one guy. But what's a curveball with that is that Rufus du Sol, I'm like, a female? Like, it's definitely not a guy if they're pregnant. And
And then finally, the thing about, I think that you're so endearing to the Bonnaroo audience is because Rufus is the, what do they call those things? That's like the mascot of Bonnaroo is Rufus. But it's spelled R-O-O-F-U-S. It's three circles of the smiley face. So, you know, you sort of like have an automatic in with the Bonnarooians.
That's so good.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah. Great. The figure, the animated figure, Rufus.
It was the long play. We knew it. We knew.
Yeah. You knew it the whole time. there is one other thing that, and probably not in your department, and you probably don't know anything about it because, you know, I'm sure you don't spend much time, you know, worrying about booking. But, you know, you had the 2018 Bonnaroo. You did Coachella 2 years in a row. Then you were going to come back for the second version of Bonnaroo when it got rescheduled to Labor Day. That fell apart. This year, this tour that you're embarking on has two festivals on it, Boston Calling and Forecastle. Was there any sort of conversation about why those two festivals and not a Bonnaroo again or a Coachella again? And if you weren't part of that, then don't worry about it. I thought that it was an interesting set of tour dates I saw.
Yeah. I mean, I can't remember the conversation, but I know that we've had it. Mm-hmm. But I guess like you're booking shows like a year out. So those conversations were like 6 months ago. But I don't know why. It made sense at the time.
Sure. Fine by me.
Yeah, they're good
in
ones.
Terms of like, you know, playing the same festival again and again, it's like, of course, like you have your favorite festivals and your personal love for festivals, but there are different crowds and different people, and it's a real opportunity for us to get into in front of new ears to play a new festival or a different festival, as opposed to, you know, I feel like most festivals have their loyal fans, and you know, you play one, hopefully. I just think alternating between festivals is healthy for us as a band. But we obviously have our favorites.
For somebody who's actually done this overseas and in America, can you tell a marked difference between the European festivals and the festivals overseas than American festivals? What is the difference for you?
We haven't done so much in Europe. I mean, we've done a lot of stuff over there, but we haven't played many festivals over there. In Australia, I could speak in terms of Australia. They're quite similar, really. Mm. I mean, it's just that Australia's a lot smaller of a market, not in terms of landmass, but in terms of population.
Sure. Who's your favorite Australian artist?
Australian artist?
Uh-huh.
Tame Impala.
Ah, okay. I was hoping to say Courtney Barnett. It's amazing how many Australian artists have exploded over the last 10 years, right? Whereas before, there weren't, I mean, it just was not a fertile ground of art bands coming out of Australia. And then out of nowhere, it feels like every time I turn around, there's another Australian band making, you know, some sort of noise.
Well, that's true. Courtney Barnett is really amazing. She's such a good storyteller. And there is just so many great acts that are coming out of Australia. I don't know. There's a nationwide radio station in Australia called Triple J, and it's like an alternative radio station that you can hear, you know, hip hop to heavy metal to something more poppy to indie rock and roll. Yeah, and it's just like the full spectrum. Mm-hmm. And I'd say for the most part, that's what, if you're growing up, that's what you're listening to as a kid. And so I think a lot of a large portion of Australians are growing up listening to a wide variety of music, and I don't know what that does for a brain or like your taste in music or how that affects your influence in terms of what you want to write. But I think that has something to do with it.
Oh, yeah.
If I was to guess.
Oh, yeah.
Is it the kind of, did it help foster an environment where you felt like you could come from Australia and make it? You know what I mean?
Sure.
That's a huge part of things.
I think we weren't even looking outside of Australia though. Okay. I think that it was like the opportunity that you could have your song on Triple J. Okay. Like in Australia, it's like, oh my God, if we get a song on there, then the whole country can potentially hear your song. And that means you could tour to, you know, the six biggest cities and you potentially play these festivals that you know about. It's so small over there, like that it's doable. Like it's like you can do it. And yeah,
that's what I mean. That's good.
Yeah. See, Barry, radio still matters. Damn it, radio still matters.
Maybe Australia.
Not here, but it matters in there. Australia. Matters somewhere. Man, Tyrone, thank you so much for the time. I'm so excited to see you guys. You know, and it's been wonderful to watch you guys explode over the last couple of years. I think the new single's terrific and the new album's so much fun to listen to. I can't wait to see it live, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me. And yeah, it's great to chat.
Right, enjoy
Thanks
LA.
For your time.
See you soon. Old Tyrone, you better call Tyrone on the What podcast. The thing about him is that just a sweetheart. Yeah. And I feel as though if you know, I didn't constantly interrupt, he would have just talked forever.
Yeah. 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 He's a one question interview.
Yeah.
How are you?
Yeah. Barry loves those. Barry loves those.
Those are great.
Barry's go-to move on something like that, if you ever notice, I pull the curtain back. His go-to move is, with the new album, did you accomplish everything you wanted? Person go for 45 minutes and, all right, got my story. Well, see you later.
It's actually a two-parter. What did you hope to accomplish and did you do it? That's a pro tip there. Now you're giving
journalism 101 kids. You're getting a master class here from Barry.
You're giving my secrets away.
Yeah.
Works every time.
But by the way, if you ever hear Barry say that, either he knows exactly where he's going with it or he has nothing.
Again, you're giving all my good stuff away.
I really liked it though. I mean, mainly because look, I'm not going to pretend I know much about electronic music. It's not something I ever really engaged with, but I do find Rufus's Soul interesting because, you know, they're one of the few ones that operates it like a band. And the way that he described it, although I'm sure it was mind numbing for him to explain it to some sort of idiot like me, but
yeah,
it really helps me sort of understand, you know, and the gist I was getting to, Barry, was dumb guys like me think that you walk up there with a laptop and you hit play.
Right. No, they're actually playing. They remind me, and I always hesitate to compare, but it reminds me a lot of early Alan Parsons Project stuff, which I love. I liked it. I like it a lot.
Yeah,
It was interesting to hear him talk about process. I'm really fascinated by that whole having a year and a half to create an album. That just seems to me like it would brain lock somebody.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, you can give me a year and a half. I'm still going to wait to the last 2 weeks. And the song that I come up with is going to be word, 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 wordy, wordy, yeah. Word, 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 word.
Exactly.
Done.
Exactly. Yeah, and the thing we did a year and a half ago, I'm over it.
I don't even remember what I did 2 weeks ago.
I know, right?
A year and a half ago.
That was interesting.
So, did you find it interesting that, and this is not a shot, but he really doesn't know one festival from the other?
That's what I'm saying. A bus, a road, a stage, a bus, a road, a stage.
And there's really nothing wrong with that, especially if the show is good. But, you know, it makes me wonder if that's how McCartney is most days. You know, he's like, where in the hell am I? Knoxville? All right, I guess I'll
Who cares?
Well, guys like that are very intentional now about what they do, from what I've heard. They do the shows they want. They've done it enough. They know how to travel. But you did hear him say, as you're talking about the mental health thing, before it was road. And now they're very, again, intentional about whatever, you know, instead of 3 months, maybe 4 weeks and then come off. So,
well, the other thing too, is that I found to be refreshing is, and this is not, again, not a knock on the people that we've talked to before, but we have talked to plenty of artists where it feels like they are in control of everything. Almost to a problematic place where you can't get a show past them. They know every person that's in part of the operation. Sure. They've got their hands in everything. It sounds to me like the way that he operates, like, all right, you guys just do that. I'll go be writing songs here.
Yeah. Well, a 2-year-old would do that to you.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah.
In part.
Good point.
I'd rather be home. Yeah. It changes things. I mean, no question. It was fun to hear him talk about that.
The other thing that I found interesting was how, without saying it, you know, I think that there are plenty of bands that spend a lot of time going overboard with the mental health thing, although it is very important and it should be something that's celebrated. You know, it's almost become, to me, it's like, oh, I know, I get it. It's important. They're doing it in a very interesting way. It's not preachy. And it's not telling you that mental health is important. It's saying, no, this was on us. We got our stuff figured out and we fixed whatever issues that were going on. And, you know.
Yeah, shot of whiskey versus a shot of ginger. I mean, it's like you said, they were heading towards something bad. And so we got to fix it. And they've done it. So, you know, everybody's different, but it's good for them. And I meant to ask him, you know, who led that sort of change? Did they all three come together, or was outside sources says you guys need to fix this, or all of that, or whatever? But
you lead on to a good point, because it takes all three to be a part of something like that. It can't just be like one person saying, you gotta, what the wife always says is like, you gotta, the person's gotta find yoga. You can't like force them into it. Correct. Right. So, and it's almost like therapy. You can't force somebody to go to therapy. They got to find it on their own time. And it's weird that they all sort of seem to find it at the same time.
Yeah. It'd be like you or me saying, Taco, no more PBR. You need to do a shot of ginger. We've decided we're going to do ginger shots instead.
I'm hanging up.
Well, I'm glad you brought that up, because Taco, we've been meaning to talk to you about a few things.
Oh no, it's good. I drink High Life now.
Now we're... You have changed.
I have changed.
I've given it up, kids. I've given it up. I'm moving on. Dad is back. All right. Well,
you make a good point. It takes all three of them. It would have taken all three of them. So
I really appreciate that. And he gave us way too much time. And I really do think that the song, the other thing too, I guess that's what I tried to dance around without, I'm just not smart enough to come out and just find a clever way of asking it, but you have this massive following. They sold 50,000 tickets for an LA show. They had to add 2 more dates to. They've got 1 billion streams. Awesome. They're a massive, massive operation. And they've done it all, you know, completely, you know, underground. You know, underground meaning with no real radio support. Yeah.
You're not playing them, are you?
Well, we just started. Yeah, their new single is actually really, really good. But, you know, they did it all just sort of, you know, the 2020 version of doing this, you know, streaming. And, you know, I find it to be an incredible story. You know, it panics me a little bit because they don't need us. They don't need us. They got to take care of themselves.
Nice. Well, yeah. It's pretty cool.
Cool. I enjoyed it a lot. Anything else before we go?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well, I got nothing.
Oh, do we figure out what we're going to do with the tickets?
Yeah, we talked about it on the last episode, Barry. I know,
but we were talking about how we were going to do it. And we already have, you know, we already have a leader in the clubhouse.
We have our first entry. And the first really entry in the bar high.
I know, but guys... That happened 2 weeks ago, remember?
Okay.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys remember, but that happened so long ago.
Never mind. Bye.
Bye, guys.
See ya.
Consequence Podcast Network.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.